This is Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday, the 15th of November, 2019. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 15th of November. And this week our editors were Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard, Sheila Shepard and Sheila Shepherd. Your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now the main headlines this week are Council Wrapped Over Failure, Big Grant Lost Due to Court Battle Over Plan, and City Falls Silent in Remembrance. May we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
Council Wrapped Over Failure. The High Court has struck a blow against the City Council over its handling of a bid to build hundreds of new homes. The authority was challenged by the University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust, the University Hospital of Southampton, after it gave the go-ahead for 200 homes on land north of Ravenswood House, Mayles Lane, Knowle, in March. The University Hospital argued that it had provided representations to the council that if the application were given the go-ahead, a financial contribution should be made to the trust to provide services needed by the occupants of the new development. The trust provided a number of previous and similar appeal decisions, which it considered essential, and requested £40,588 from the scheme. However, the trust's requests were deemed self-promoting by the council, and ignored it in its decision. And an officer's report said, certainly the lack of addressing the financial claim made by the trust would not, and have not in the past on other major development schemes, necessitate the development being considered unacceptable. But the High Court disagreed and sided with the University Hospital, concluding that the authority had failed properly to consider and to address the material conclusions reached in those previous appeal decisions. A spokesperson for University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust said, we've been in discussion with the council for some time regarding the significant impact of new housing developments on NHS services, given the fact no additional government funding is made available to help meet the increased demand this brings. While the eventual need for legal action was regrettable, we are pleased council members will now have an opportunity to consider whether or not housing developers should make a financial contribution towards the additional pressure placed on local NHS services. And greater repercussions were dealt to the schemes submitted by Homes England as planning permission was quashed, with calls for the application to now go before the council's planning committee as the previous plan was solely approved by officers. The City Council said Winchester City Council is reassessing this application following the receipt of legal representation from University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust. We remain in dialogue with all relevant parties ahead of a formal planning decision. A Homes England spokesperson added, we're disappointed with this decision and the delay it will cause. However, we are hopeful for a resolution where outline planning consent will be re-granted later this year. As part of the application, land along the River Mayon and the Knowle Triangle was due to be handed over to Wickham Parish Council for community use. But according to Parish Councillor Therese Evans, this has been left in limbo. Councillor Evans said that legal work had been carried out and paid for by the Parish Council. The figure for the work is not known. She added, the Parish Council was looking forward to the completion of this matter. As chairman of the City Council's Planning Committee, Councillor Evans said that the challenge from UHS came in right at the last minute, and it was a very unusual event for a case to be brought on such matters. If the application is given the go-ahead, The site will be marketed to find a developer to deliver the homes, 40% of which are expected to be affordable. It is also planned to incorporate associated access, landscaping, parking, and open space.
Let's have the second story behind the headlines, please, Noel.
Yes, and this is a parallel story to that one. Big grant loss due to court battle over plan. The Winchester council leader has told colleagues that a £5 million grant has been lost following a legal challenge from preservation watchdogs over the station approach scheme. The City of Winchester Trust had launched legal action over the City Council approval of the planning application for the £150 million scheme to develop offices by the railway station. A £5 million grant was earmarked for the scheme from the Local Enterprise Partnership, that's LEP, but with a tight deadline for the work to be completed. The money was earmarked for archaeological work, but mainly to improve the public realm at key entrance to the city from the rail station. Councillor Lucille Thompson told the council meeting last Wednesday, "As councillors are aware, this money has to be spent by March the 31st, 2021, and our officer team has been in close dialogue with the M3 LEP over the past week. The legal challenge has meant that we have had to inform the LEP that we can no longer guarantee to meet this spending deadline. We remain committed to supporting the economy of our beautiful city, but we'll have to do without the benefit of £5 million of external funding." She also revealed that council officers have stopped marketing the site to potential developers until the legal position is clear. The trust alleges the council, when it granted planning permission, failed to assess the impact of the scheme on the local heritage assets. Of the £5 million, £1 million was earmarked for archaeological works and £4 million for improving the public realm as a gateway to the city. The case is before the High Court, but the City of Winchester Trust believes it has a strong case. Should it succeed, it would be the third legal defeat of the City Council in 3 years, following Councillor Kim Gottlieb overturning the first Silver Hill redevelopment in 2016, and the recent case of the University of Southampton NHS Foundation Trust suing the council over the 200 house scheme near Knowle Hospital near Wickham. The Chronicle approached the Local Enterprise Partnership for a comment, but it did not respond before the paper went to print on Wednesday, November the 13th afternoon.
Over to Jane for the third headline story.
Which is completely different. It is the Remembrance Sunday story. City falls silent in remembrance. Hundreds gathered in Winchester to take part in the city's annual Remembrance Sunday service. Members of the armed forces and veterans joined youngsters from the scouting movement and the public for commemorations at the cathedral. The sound of the last post played out before the grounds around the historic building, which fell silent to remember those who fought for the country. Wreaths were laid in front of the war memorial by civic dignitaries, service personnel, along with representatives from local organisations. The commemorations were a chance for people to remember those who have lost their lives in conflict since the First World War. And on Armistice Day, a 2-minute silence was held at the Guildhall. The armistice was signed on November the 11th, 1918. It was a document that marked the end of 4 years of fighting during the First World War. And this is surrounded by photographs of the event last Sunday. There are the armed forces leading, standing in front of the entrance to the cathedral, and then entering the cathedral with the mayor and many members of the public, and the serving members themselves are lined down the edge of the cathedral, standing, not in seats, singing during the service, and three flag bearers on one side, a very young scout and a serving member and a veteran standing with their flags next to each other at one side. And then the crowds gathered around the war memorial with wreaths of poppies and members of the university and many people in black and looking up, and the sky is very blue with beautiful autumnal trees against it in glorious oranges and greens.
And that concludes the headline stories. Well, we're going to continue now with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, editorial comment, first person, Belgarum diary, and finish with the question and answer at My Winchester. Then afterwards, right at the end, we'll have the items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Avercook, Melva, peacefully aged 94. Ball, Mary, peacefully. Davy, Ada Robinson Davy, aged 102, at West Home Care Home. Gamblin, Sheila Doreen Gamblin, peacefully aged 87. Heathcote, Victoria Michelle Heathcock, and she was née Jacobs, and she was 48. Jackson, née Lundy, Margaret Agnes Mary Lundy Jackson, known as Peggy, peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home, aged 97. Martin, Louise Victoria Martin, suddenly aged 45. Vincent, the Lady Jean Patterson Vincent, aged 92. And finally, Watts, David Edward Watts, peacefully aged 83. And now it's over to Jane, who's going to read Christian comment.
Christian comment this week is anti-democracy and complex culture. 82 years ago, on the 11th of November 1947, Winston Churchill said in the House of Commons that democracy is the worst form of government except for all those other forms that have been tried from time to time. As we face another election on the 12th of December, we all realise we're in a right pickle. All the traditional politics appear to have been thrown out of the window. Traditionally, the Conservatives have been against government spending, but now they are vying with Labour about who can borrow the most national debt. Even traditional Labour voters are recommending supporters vote Tory. Meanwhile, Brexit cuts across every social divide, uniting elements of both Labour and Tory in favour of Leave. Remainers moan on about how it would be best to stop Brexit because a good deal is worse than the current deal of staying in the EU. Some leavers, given the chance, would now vote Remain, whilst some Remainers would now vote Leave in order to honour the result of the 2016 referendum. Will going to the polls solve this problem? In an attempt to equip clergy to pastor and preach in their communities on the Sunday after our supposed leaving date of 31st of October, we sought advice from our expert in London. He said that elections and economics are not the right tools to solve our problems. Two stories illustrate this. Imagine working all your life in a pie factory in Lincolnshire that gets taken over by a Polish firm which slowly imports more Polish management and workers. What if they decide one day to hold a vote on what language should be used in official company communication? If more people vote for Polish, how does that make the native Brits feel? Voting with a binary result cannot solve a complex cultural issue. Imagine your granny knits soft toys that are sold for charity on a weekly market stall. What if a businessman comes along and agrees to buy the lot at the prices on the labels in order to ship them to Greece where he can sell them for a profit? Market economics does not recognise the love, care and attention with which the soft toys have been given for charitable purposes. We are currently trying to solve a complex issue of cultural identity using the blunt instrument of an election and using rudimentary market arguments or to define whether Leave or Remain makes us better off. Such tools do not equip us to build culturally rich and thriving communities. I want life to be more than fair. I want more than a turbocharged economy. A Christian contribution to society offers the glue that binds us together, faith, hope, and love. Until our politicians can offer us more than soundbite slogans, I fear this election will simply give us the worst form of government. And that was from the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, Canon Principal.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. Now, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Poem of No, writes Jill Thorne. Poem of No, Sir. November. No Brexit consensus, no majority, no deal, no no-deal Brexit, no March-October Brexit, no new 50-pence coins, no extension, extension. No new deal, a deal. No consensus, no other choice, a general election, no sittings, debates or PMQs, no late-night sittings, no ballots or bills or three-lined whips, no divisions or Hansard reports, no order, order. November. Jill Thorne, Woodland Drove, Twyford.
Yes, and Simon Lever brings us back down to earth, talking about a destructive plan. Sir, the plans by Eastleigh Council to build 5,000 houses suggest the council could be operating out of an underground bunker and insulated from reality. Planning to build 5,000 houses without a transparent policy, public engagement or consultation with those potentially affected in nearby areas is destructive and undemocratic, resulting in the most terrible consequences for the whole region. The concerns of residents in Twyford Village, Colden Common, Otterbourne, Compton and Shawford have been ignored, as has the impact on the natural environment. Councillor Jan Warwick's article, Chronicle November the 7th, addresses the genuine concerns of residents where damage to the rural locality, including rivers, would be severe. Building on greenfield areas, increased vehicle pollution, traffic jams and the overall effect on the carbon footprint are all realistic issues. 5,000 houses equate to potentially 10,000 or more residents and accompanying escalating vehicle usage. This environmentally destructive plan must be cancelled. Optimistically, good sense will prevail. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And Jeff Naylor writes, climate issues. Sir, in the context of the climate emergency, contemporary economics is becoming obsolete. In order to mitigate the disastrous effects of climate breakdown with appropriate policy and action, politicians need to know the real value to society of human activity. Currently, the economics profession does not evaluate this. It is blinkered by the metrics of financial transactions and does not consider the quality of experienced outcomes. Orthodox economics is tied to the ideology of a market economy whereby value is determined by the consumer and to some extent by governments, whereas what is urgently required is the measurement of this missing dimension, the degree of benefit or harmfulness to humanity of each and every economic activity. This would change perception and have a bearing on present dominant financial value. Once known, politicians would be able to identify those activities that have negative or mixed outcomes that could be most quickly substituted with alternative, beneficial ones and direct their action accordingly. And that was from Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Colden Common.
The editor has published two letters from Jeff Naylor of Birch Close, Colden Common, so here comes the second one. It's entitled Climate Crisis. Sir, a bleak warning indeed from 11,000 scientists that the climate crisis will bring untold suffering. It is right and prudent for Britain to take action to help reduce global greenhouse gases. But what if bigger polluters like America and China do little or nothing? It will be unmitigated disaster, with all good things coming to an end. And in this eventuality, we need to have a worst-case scenario survival plan to provide the basics of food, water, shelter, warmth and protection. This is not alarmist. What is alarming is that many politicians think the United Kingdom general election is about Brexit and international trade. Climate breakdown will put an end to all that.
Peter Rees writes about remembrance. Sir, walking into Winchester, I often take the route through the hospital, university and West Hill Cemetery. I observe Remembrance Sunday, but having visited many CWCG locations, that's the War Graves, official War Graves group, I try to pause and reflect on the liberty and freedom I enjoy at the expense of the sacrifice of so many military service personnel in two world wars. Many from World War I are buried in West Hill, identified by an official war grave. The CWCG is responsible for 306,000 service personnel buried in 13,000 locations. 107,000 were men and women who died at home and in military hospitals from their wounds. 37,000 were buried in private graves, remembered by their families in chosen locations and established family graves. Some died in training accidents, some died in action on land, in the air or at sea and washed ashore. The CWCG inspects each location every 2 or 3 years. Grave headstones are treated with masonry biocide, and a team of mobile craftsmen and stonemasons undertake maintenance and remedial work. It seems to me highly significant that, as important as Remembrance Sunday is, a day of national appreciation for the dead who gave us our freedom and liberty, we should make an effort to ensure they are not forgotten throughout each year. In comparison with the way many graves and memorials understandably suffer and degrade through lack of attention and other factors, the CWCG does an excellent job in maintaining the dignity and quality of the last resting place of the brave men and women who died for this country, as well as those from other nations who supported us in two global conflicts. They are not forgotten. After nearly 75 years of European peace, forged through the determined alliance of its nations after World War II, at a time when we are to be arbitrarily severed from these immediate allies, it might be valuable to reflect on the inspirational and brave sacrifice of these selfless and patriotic people, while we enjoy the freedom and democracy they sacrificed their lives for. Peace in Europe since World War II may yet again be under threat. Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And Norma Goodwin writes about charity quilts. Sir, if you love making quilts but have no one to give them to, you could do better than donate them to Project Linus UK. We are a UK community interest company run completely by volunteers, and our mission is to provide gifts of new, homemade washable quilts and blankets to babies, children and teenagers who are sick, disabled, disadvantaged or distressed. Our volunteer area coordinators deliver around 3,500 quilts and blankets across the UK each month. We cannot reach out to every distressed child, but we can help to provide them with a tangible evidence that someone cares, along with the physical reassurance that comes with being snuggled up in a quilt. In fact, our motto is, "A quilt is a hug you can keep." We always try to deliver quilts and blankets to children who are local to the makers. I am the PLUK coordinator for Winchester and Mid-Hampshire, and give quilts to the Winchester Hospital Children's Northbrook Ward and the Neonatal Ward for premature babies. I also supply Winchester Young Carers, Friends of the Family, Winchester Refuge and Spurgeon's Charity, which gives support to children and families at HMP Winchester Prison. Find out more about Project Linus on projectlinusuk.org.uk. If you would like to donate a quilt or know more about this project named after Linus, the friend of Charlie Brown in the Peanuts cartoons, please be in touch with me, norma.goodwin at btinternet.com, or my mobile 07789156457. That's 07789156457. Many thanks. And that was from Norma Goodwin, Momford Road, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Not another. No room for new Lidl, writes Phil Yates. Sir, so little supermarket chain wants to come to Winchester, not only in the city centre, but also to Badger Farm. I would have thought that the city and the surrounding areas are well supplied with such stores. In the city, we have Sainsbury's, Tesco and Iceland, as well as Marks and Spencer. On the outskirts at Wick, Badger Farm and Winnall, respectively, are Aldi, Waitrose, Sainsbury's and Tesco. Surely this is sufficient for a city the size of Winchester. Anyway, there's no site available at present time for another supermarket in the city centre. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Martin Simpson says, end uncertainty. Excuse me. Sir, a vote for Paula Ferguson is a vote for more division, more delay and more uncertainty for business. The country remains divided on Brexit and compromise, not extremism, is required. She is very much in the mould of those parliamentarians over the last 3 years whose efforts have paralysed the country into a Brexit Groundhog Day. They hold the country and its businesses in a perpetual void of uncertainty, unable to invest as they wait to see what business models will be optimum depending on the outcome of Brexit. Time for the uncertainty to end. What she fails to see is her party's plan to stop Brexit and make it all go away is an Alice in Wonderland fantasy, a genuinely extremist position that completely ignores the millions of voters who still want to leave the EU. And even if there was another referendum and Remain won, the campaign to leave will continue, overshadowing so many other issues, dividing the nation for years to come, and perpetuating uncertainty as the ignored voices demanding a break from the EU grow ever louder and even angrier. Boris's deal is a genuine compromise, far from perfect for either side, but it allows us to move on to trade talks, significantly reduce uncertainty for business, and creates more space for Parliament to work on the many other issues facing this country. As uncertainty lifts, investment will be released into our economy, allowing it to power forward, helping to generate the tax revenues we need to fund our public services. It is well past time that moderate voices in our community accept that to heal the nation, we should leave under this deal and move forward. Time for quiet, pragmatic reflection on this before entering the polling booth. Martin Simpson, Benenden Green, Alsford.
And Bob Boddy writes, European values. Sir, like Jacob Rees-Mogg, James Anderson, Chronicle Letters, November the 7th, criticises the EU for being protectionist. This presumably means that Mr. Anderson, like Mr. Rees-Mogg, takes a let-the-market-decide approach to trade. But even Donald Trump protects or espouses to protect the livelihoods of his countrymen, women and children and communities with his America First policy. For me, at the heart of this issue is the question of what sort of country do we want to be? Do we really want to be buccaneers exploiting deregulated world markets to find the sweatshops where people, men, women and children, are working the longest hours for the lowest wages? Pro-Brexit politicians would have us trade on World Trade Organization terms, but the World Trade Organization doesn't concern itself with ethical issues such as workers' rights, being concerned mostly with economics. In comparison, the EU ensures that European values are incorporated into its trade deals, and European values are at the heart of Paula Ferguson's politics. She is a politician with principles. And that was from Bob Boddy, Egbert Road, Hyde in Winchester.
Public schools, writes David W. Carter. Sir, I read Peter Rees's letter in the Chronicle with interest. The public schools do indeed enjoy considerable tax benefits as a result of their charitable status. I cannot speak for Winchester College, founded in 1397 by William of Wickham. I believe the original charter was to provide education to children of poor backgrounds. I have little doubt that today the college continues to provide education directly to children from deprived backgrounds, as well as a host of support activities to local and further afield schools and academies in the state sector. This is a duty, not an expediency. I have no experience of their success, but I do know of a big public school that supports an academy in a most deprived part of East London. In the 10 years prior to that school's support to the academy, just 2 students had attained entry to Oxbridge in 10 years. In the last 2 years, this same academy has achieved 26 Oxbridge entries, following the support of the public school. There is so much the private sector, that some say is the envy of the world, can provide to state education. I have little doubt Winchester also provides a range of bursaries to pupils from all backgrounds. The centre-left was never hung up on this matter, many of their leaders and representatives coming from or making use of the private sector. Surely to provide top-class students for Oxbridge from deprived backgrounds, either by support to academies and schools or through bursaries at our world-class public schools, is a far better way than simply destroying them. Imagine the legal tussle involved in nationalising these public-private school assets. It is for the Charity Commission to ensure the public schools live up to their charitable status, and for the government to title regulation in this area where required. David Carter, Ashton Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
And Catherine Hutchinson, who I must say is the former Labour City Council candidate, writes about pact pitfalls. Sir, the recently announced pact between Lib Dems and Greens is a lesson in the pitfalls and dead ends of tactical voting. Having been deprived of a Green candidate and Green vote, Greens in Winchester must now trust that party members somewhere else in the country will return an MP, and that on a national scale this will be worthwhile. Meanwhile, the Lib Dem candidate here must hope that disappointed Winchester Green voters flock to her cause purely in order to somehow overturn Brexit. Even if she is returned as an MP, Winchester will have achieved little for the climate or local environment, surely the primary concern for Green voters. The Lib Dem candidate, however pleasant she is personally, associates herself with a party which supported austerity and the abandonment of climate change mitigation when in coalition. A party whose leader takes money from fracking and is conducting a delusional Brexit-fixated election campaign with little to offer on the environment that is not bettered elsewhere. Is this really worth the pact? In truth, Labour is now the only genuinely green vote in Winchester. Labour's transformational Green New Deal makes it the one real option. Winchester Labour is also energised by having selected its first local homegrown candidate for some time, George Baker. Whether he becomes an MP or not, he deserves the support of all who want to vote for the environment with their principles intact. Frankly, they have nothing to lose by voting Labour if this pact is the only alternative. And who knows, Winchester returning a Labour MP called George in 1945, perhaps it's time we sent another Labour MP named George to Westminster. Catherine Hutchinson, former Labour City Council candidate, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And to end the letters on a positive note, Jane Baldock writes positive points. Sir, do you receive letters of a positive nature? On the fairly regular occasions that I peruse the letters page, the comments are overwhelmingly negative, usually concerned with unwanted or undesirable new buildings or the slow progress of planned development. I have no doubt that these are valid opinions shared by many. However, in the interest of balance, surely it is important to acknowledge some positives of life in Winchester. With that in mind, I would like to say thank you to the Discovery Centre for the delightful Orla Keeley exhibition and for the outstanding BP Portrait Award exhibition earlier this year. I would also like to say how much I enjoyed Lucy Worsley's talk at the Guildhall last weekend. Funny and entertaining, as well as informative. We live in such a beautiful place, and there is much to enjoy here. And that was from Jane Baldock, Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
And that was the very last letter for this week. Thank you to all the contributors. And now it's time for your say. Lidl has earmarked Winchester to build a new supermarket. We asked people what they thought. Heather has the answers.
Nick Rhodes, aged 17, a student of Winchester, said, "It's good to have more options. People can give a bit of thought to where they're spending their money." Sylvia Knight, a carer of St Cross, Winchester, says, "We've already got Aldi. I don't know if we need Lidl. They're quite samey. I'm against taking greenery away to build, too. Alexander Knight, aged 22, of Badger Farm, said, Sainsbury's have the monopoly in this area. I don't drive and can only really walk to Sainsbury's, so it'd be nice. And Daniel Spark, aged 23, charity worker of Andover Road, said, It's a cheap supermarket, so why not? Although it is similar to Aldi.
Now we're going back through the mists of time for historical news items from our dusty old files. And we'll start with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was Friday, November the 11th, 1994. Two items. First, computer thieves escaped with equipment worth about £55,000 when they raided Hampshire County Council offices in Winchester over the weekend. The intruders stole 34 computer systems and associated hardware when they struck at the Social Services Finance Department at Westgate House, Trafalgar Road. Their haul included terminals, keyboards and central processing units for Dell and Olivetti computers. A council spokesman said that most of the computers in the department were taken, but stressed that they contained budgetary information rather than confidential details of clients. He added that the department's work was continuing this week with the use of backup files. The burglary, which was discovered by a member of staff who called at the offices on Sunday morning, took place sometime between 7 p.m. on Friday and 11:30 a.m. on Sunday. Detective Inspector Kevin Walton of North Walls Police Station said, It was possibly done during the evening of November the 5th, when there were plenty of bangs and other noises that may have hidden what was going on. And the second item, in the days gone by, Winchester celebrated the demise of Guy Fawkes by racing blazing tar barrels down the length of the High Street. Nowadays, however, most people are content to walk up the city streets as part of a huge torchlight procession led by floats, marching bands and majorettes. Illuminated by blazing flares, the muffled figures wend their way from the Broadway to Oram's Arbour, where they are treated to a splendid bonfire and firework display free of charge. Winchester Roundtable started this tradition 36 years ago and now regularly attracts crowds of more than 10,000 people. And this year, 1994 that is, was no exception. For even though the carnival, with just two floats, was small, the people of Winchester still turned out in force for Saturday's display, which actually fell on the 5th, the 389th anniversary of the day Guy Fawkes tried to blow up the Houses of Parliament.
50 years, Heather.
Saturday, November the 15th, 1969. Money spent on retail purchases in the area of the South Hampshire Plan is estimated at £180 million a year. By 1991, this figure could well have doubled. This is one of the conclusions drawn by the plan's technical unit, who've carried out a detailed survey of shopping needs within the area. To cater for the demand, they envisage the need for an additional 4 million square feet of shop space. During the course of the survey, it studied shopping trends at 19 different centres, and interviewed more than 10,000 shoppers who were asked how they travelled to do their shopping and how much they were spending. A significant fact that emerged was the high number of people who used their private cars to go shopping. And these people appeared to spend considerably more than those who used other forms of transport. A breakdown of figures revealed that £88 million was being spent each year at the 19 centres studied in detail, and the remainder, £94 million, in other quarters. And this showed that local shopping centres make a very significant contribution to the shopping provision of South Hampshire. A massive scheme is getting underway which will bring up to standard 1,000 pre-war houses in Winchester at a cost approaching £1 million. Work may start in the spring on a pilot project of 50 houses. The rest will be tackled over a period of 10 years. The Winchester City Housing and Health Committee has adopted a report from an improvement subcommittee which set out guidelines. It is proposed that the first houses to be improved will be those already vacant and those where the tenants want the improvement. These houses will be at Stanmore, where they have stood since 1920. The committee proposed to accept improvements made by tenants, provided they are designed to last 30 years, but warn they may demand certain modifications. Tenants will be offered a choice of central heating between solid fuel and gas, and one of the first homes to be converted will be opened as a show house.
Okay, now let's go back 100 years.
Yes, to two items from Saturday, November the 15th, 1919. The first item, the custom of organising a complimentary dinner to the ex-mayor was rightly resumed in the case of Mr. Alderman Ed Meads, and the gathering at the Guildhall on Monday evening was most gratifying and successful in every way. There had not been a function of the kind since 1913, when Mr. Councillor Seeley retired from the mayoralty in 1914. We were facing the first blast of the war and were in no mood for conviviality, and there has been no opportunity of entertaining an ex-mayor until now. Remembering the record of Alderman Ed Meads, it was not surprising that there should have been a considerable demand for tickets. The dinner was served in the banqueting room, the company numbering over 100. And the second item, an official announcement has been published in the following terms. The King has been pleased to approve of the appointment of the Venerable William Holden Hutton, M.A.D.D., D.C.L., Archdeacon of Northampton and Canon of Peterborough, to the Deanery of Winchester, vacant by the resignation of the Very Reverend William Mordaunt Furneaux, M.A.D.D. Dr. Hutton is the younger son of the late Reverend George Hutton, Rector of Gate Burton, Lincolnshire, and is 59 years of age, having been born on May the 25th, 1860.
Finally, let's go back 200 years, Jane.
And a little tiny article from 200 years ago, which was Monday, November the 15th, 1819. A few days ago, a labourer in the employment of a brewer at Chelsea purchased of a Jew a pair of old stays for ninepence. On taking them home, his wife proceeded to repair them and found, concealed within the lining, banknotes to the amount of £50.
Back to the present now. Let's have an editorial comment, please, Heather.
And the editor asks, what is going on in planning at council? Winchester City Council has lost yet another planning issue, this time in the High Court. University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust took the council to court over the council's failure to factor in the cost of providing extra healthcare for the residents of a new development near Knowle Hospital. The upshot is that the planning permission agreed under delegated powers has been overturned. Setting aside that such a major proposal should have been dealt with by planning officers instead of going to committee for scrutiny by the elected city councillors, this court case raises worrying questions. This is the third major court issue involving the planning department in 3 years. In 2016, Councillor Kim Gottlieb overturned the first scheme for redeveloping the Silver Hill area, now called Saxon Gate. A few weeks ago, we reported the City of Winchester Trust is seeking and expecting to win a judicial review over the station approach scheme. And now this. The public will have the right to ask what on earth is going on.
Now, Noel is going to give us what one person thinks of the state of affairs now. He's going to read First Person by Khalid Aziz.
Yes, Khalid Aziz has headed his article, Lest We Forget. The poppies have been removed from buttonholes and radiator grills for another year. On war memorials throughout the county, wreaths flap, often sodden in the damp and windy November weather. Medals are carefully rewrapped in their tissue paper and put away. Just a few days after our various acts of remembrance, life goes on. And so it should. Time was when, the further away from the two world wars it was, thought memories would dim and with them acts of remembrance. Thankfully, that has proven to be far from the truth. Last Sunday I was on duty as a deputy lieutenant, as were many of my fellow deputies, fanning out across the county to attend services of remembrance. As in previous years, Andover was my billet, a town with many service connections going back decades. They put on quite a show. A fine service in St Mary's Church, led this year by a new and youthful vicar, followed by a moving act of remembrance in the church graveyard, where the memorial to the Andover fallen stands. There's a parade, too. Once again, I am struck by the rich cross-section of people attending. Veterans, many making up the Royal British Legion contingent, aged but still able to snap parade ground moves that would warm the stone heart of any regimental sergeant major. For them, it's an act of honour and pride that they are as well turned out as they can be to remember their fallen comrades, and they never fail to move the spirit. Then there are the youngsters, some like the guides and scouts in uniform, others not. Their parents, like my generation, have never had to face the horror of total war. However, since the end of the Second World War, British service people have been in more than 50 armed conflicts, often coping with the so-called asymmetric warfare, battling against what the army calls improvised explosive devices, IEDs, wreaking havoc on the bodies of our soldiers. We remember the dead, but those who survive with horrific injuries need our thoughts too. At Enham Trust, just up the road from Andover at Enham Alamein, where I have the honour of chairing the Board of Trustees, our people are adept at coping with all kinds of disabilities. Set up at the end of the First World War as kind of original help for heroes, we are about to launch our centenary celebrations. Today, we look after people from a broad reach of society, but we still value our links with injured service people. For us, acts of remembrance are daily and year-long. At Enham, the remembering season starts with our El Amein service, commemorating the efforts of the British Tommies in the Egyptian desert at the height of the Second World War, and culminating in a decisive victory for General Montgomery over Rommel on the 11th of November 1942. At the time, the Egyptian government was so grateful to our service people, they donated a modern-day equivalent of over £3 million to our charity, recognised by the addition of the sobriquet El Amein to the village name by no less a figure than Monty himself, after hostilities ceased. Memories come and go, but one which sticks in with me are some of the last words of Harry Patch, the last survivor of the Great War, who died in 2009. I felt then, as I feel now, that the politicians who took us to war should have been given the guns and told to settle their differences themselves, instead of organising nothing better than legalised mass murder. As we look forward to the next few weeks of electioneering, surely peace, civility and cooperation are the way forward, however troubled are the times in which we live. Let us remember the sacrifice, but let us beware the conflicts that create the need for such sacrifice. Perhaps that is what we should really remember between Remembrance Sundays.
And now we've got Question and Answer, My Winchestone. It's read by Heather.
Rachel Moss is 51 years old and the co-principal of Winchester School of English in Monarch Way. And she tells us what she thinks of the city. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Well, I love Stein's for great seafood and wonderful service. The romantic Chesil Rectory is my favourite on my wedding anniversary. What's your favourite pub or bar? Oh, the Wickham Arms is my first choice for a cosy pint and a chat. But Incognito is a great place to start a night out with their extraordinary cocktails. Your favourite shop? Oh, I love the eclectic mix at the Consortium. I could spend a fortune in there. What's your favourite building? Well, after the Cathedral, the Guildhall. Such an impressive town hall. Favourite view? Oh, the view down the High Street from the top of the West Gate. You are looking down on a street that's been there since Roman times. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Well, for me, it's Jane Austen. I've loved her writing since I read Pride and Prejudice for my O-levels. The mysterious Miss Austen exhibition at the Discovery Centre last year was amazing. Best kept secret? City's museums, they often get overlooked. What's the best thing about Winchester? Oh, the pubs and the restaurants, there's something for everyone. And the worst? Empty shops near the Broadway. They do make that end of town look a bit run down. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? Well, I'd love it if more people with a spare room would consider opening their homes to our wonderful international students. Describe Winchester in a sentence. I haven't lived in Winchester for long, but it's a wonderful place to call home.
I'm going to read from the alternative look at the news with Belgarum Diary.
And Belgarum this week has two items. Firstly, what seemed like a good idea. It had probably seemed a good, efficient, money-saving idea at some point. In the run-up to Christmas shops, the Christmas shops are taking deliveries of huge amounts of Christmas cards. So, it seems the idea was, to save money, let's put them all in one big lorry and deliver it across the region. Only one vehicle and only one driver. Simple. Unfortunately, common sense played no part in the thinking. And so, as the Chronicle reported last week, a huge, articulated lorry trundled onto the Broadway and tried to turn left into Colebrook Street to head for Boots in the square. The Hallmark lorry was presumably delivering festive cards and, yes, it got stuck and disrupted the journeys of many drivers. The driver told passers-by that sat-nav had showed him the way. Did no one at Hallmark or the delivery contractors think that Boots stores are usually in town centres with relatively narrow roads, let alone the narrow historic streets of a city such as Winchester? What seemed a good idea ended up wasting a lot of time and money, and no, we don't even know if the cards got delivered. It does add weight to the people who say these large lorries should be banned from the city centre, with some sort of drop-off point on the edge and the transfer of goods to smaller vehicles. And that item is accompanied by a photograph in the dark and the rain of the enormous Hallmark lorry trying to edge its way outside the Guildhall down into the little tiny entrance of Colebrook Street, with cars blocked in all directions. And the second item is Seeking D-Day Hero's Family. A visitor to the Normandy beaches is hoping to send a photo of a Royal Marine's gravestone to his family, who may be in Winchester. Julie Shelley attended the 75th D-Day commemorations in June and visited the British Cemetery in Bayeux. She came across the resting place of Captain James Perry, Royal Marine, number 48 Commando, who was killed on June the 6th, 1944, aged 22. She told Belgarum, "I noticed that on the personal message from his family that he was from St Austell, which is where I live. On returning to the UK, I tried to trace his family so that I could share the photo of their brave relative in case they had never had the opportunity to visit him in Normandy. It seems that James had a sister who married Herbert Wilson, but she died in 2014 in Winchester and had a son. I am unable to find out his name. I would really like to pass on the photograph to James's family and also to offer to place a small poppy cross on his grave next year on their behalf if they so wish me to. The headstone of Captain Perry is in Bayeux and the plaque bearing his name is in Langrune-sur-Mer. Her contact email is jujutay, that's J-U-E-J-U-E-T-A-Y, at talk21.com. And this is accompanied by two pictures, one of the headstone in Bayeux with his name on it, J.L. Perry, and his age, only 22 years old, and the park in Langrune-sur-Mer bearing Captain Perry's name as well.
Now we're going back to Noel, who's going to continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Jane. Oh, for God's sake. What am I doing? And now it's time for What's On. Two events at Winchester Cathedral, December the 7th at 7:30pm. 150 Wayne Fleet singers will perform alongside Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra to present Elgar's mighty Oratorio, The Kingdom. And on December the 13th at 7pm, Winchester Cathedral Carol Concert with the Cathedral Choir, joined by the award-winning comedian Hugh Dennis and BBC South Today's Sally Taylor. Tickets for both events are available from the Cathedral Box Office, 01962 857 275 or online www.tickets.winchester-cathedral.org.uk. And all details of Christmas events at the Cathedral are available from winchester-cathedral.org.uk. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 15th of November at 7:21 a.m. and begins at 4:18 p.m. Wednesday the 20th of November it ends at 7:29 a.m. begins at 4:12 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998 and her details are also available on the tag attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please return try. Before you return it, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And now we're going to continue with items of further general news, starting with Heather.
Perfect present for 100-year-old Phyllis's birthday. There's two photographs accompanying this, a black and white one of Phyllis in her younger years in her army uniform, and one of her today, an elegant lady having a champagne celebration for her birthday and another important event. A centenarian received the perfect present as she celebrated her milestone birthday. Phyllis Bainham was given the news that she had become a great-grandmother for the first time. Phyllis, who lives in the Mews Independent Living Accommodation at Sutton Manor, was enjoying her birthday party when she heard that her granddaughter Victoria was now mum to a baby girl named Autumn. The happy news meant the 100th birthday party became a double celebration. She said, "Funnily enough, when they told us they were having a baby, her husband said that it was around my birthday and that he'd told her to hold on so the baby could be born on my 100th birthday. And she jolly well did." Phyllis was born in Malvern, Worcestershire, and during the war served in the army as a driver in the Mechanised Transport Corps. Her job was to keep Britain's war effort moving by delivering fuel. She was a keen motorist all her life and only stopped driving at 95. Her civilian driving record was accident-free, but during her serving days she remembers one hair-raising incident. "It was the day after a raid in Birmingham. They badly needed petrol," she said, recalling the event. "Normally we didn't go into Birmingham. They left that to the men because they needed larger lorries than we drove. But this time we had to go. I was following a friend, and we were going down quite a steep slope, and there was quite a young girl cycling up. I could see she was going to fall off because she was wobbling, and as I looked at her and the girl in front of me braked. I tried to avoid her, but I went straight across the road, up a bank, and turned over. I did not lose any petrol, which I was congratulated about. I wasn't hurt. I climbed out of the window. The next thing I knew, I was taken home, and after lunch they said, 'Oh, right, you're going to Stratford.' So I got in and drove off to Stratford-upon-Avon, and that was it." Following the war, Phyllis lived and moved around the country with her husband, Peter Dumouchet, who passed away in 2003. She has two children, Simon and Caroline, seven grandchildren, and now a great-granddaughter, Autumn.
A tax over waste service. Excuse me. The councillor in charge of the troubled waste collection service in Winchester has been accused of complacency by the opposition Tories. Councillor Linda Murphy is overseeing the service, which has been blighted in recent months by a change in collection days, poor quality service with missed collections and patchy rollout of the new glass recycling service. Senior Tory Councillor Stephen Godfrey said Councillor Murphy, Cabinet Member for Environment, was being complacent and has had more meetings with Lib Dem councillors in Eastleigh than the one with Biffer in the first 4 months. He said, "Do you care about the collection of waste? Do you care that the glass collection is not working? When are you going to show an interest in Winchester?" Councillor Murphy is the Lib Dem parliamentary candidate in Eastleigh at the general election. But the Lib Dems responded, pointing out the service had been transformed in recent weeks. Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Service Quality and Transformation, said things were improving. He said there had been only 31 missed collections last Tuesday, or 0.3% of 10,000 collections due. I'm not satisfied with that and have made it clear I want root cause analysis of everything that goes wrong to make sure we get to zero. Councillor Murphy said she had met Biffer at several joint committee meetings held with East Hampshire District Council, with whom Winchester was then in partnership. She continued, the implementation of the contract extension had been worked out in detail, and apart from the unforeseen delay in the distribution of the collection calendars, proceeded as smoothly as could be expected. Making changes of this nature and magnitude will inevitably result in some initial disruption, but overall, a month on from the new service being introduced, the operation has bedded in, and overall the service is working effectively. The Lib Dems took over running the service from the Conservatives following their victory in the elections in May. The poor service then was a major part of the election campaign. National company Biffer is responsible for disposing of household rubbish from 47,000 households across the district.
And here we have thousands raised at city fireworks. Despite the rain, wind and boggy underfoot, more than 20,000 people turned out for this year's Winchester Roundtable bonfire and fireworks display on Saturday evening, November the 9th. Around £60,000, with £2,500 being made in donations on the night, was raised by the event, which will now go towards local charities and other good causes, including the Winchester Hospice. The 200 volunteers included Winchester Rotary, Army and Police cadets and local community groups, and numerous city-based businesses donated time and equipment. Charlie Sell, Bonfire Chairman 2019 from Winchester Roundtable, said, "Thank you so much to everyone who attended the event, volunteered on the night or helped us to put on the largest one-day charitable event in the city. The money raised means we can spark a change for people who really need support in our city." Most of the crowd started their celebrations in the Broadway and followed the torchlit procession up the High Street. The long line weaved through the city streets before ending up at Northwall's Recreation Ground for the main event. Entertainment was provided by a number of local acts, including the Winchester Rock Choir and Integrate, a dance group. Winchester Roundtable is a social group of 28 young men aged between 18 and 45 who aim to make a difference to their local communities and find lasting friendships. The organisation has been running since the 1930s, and nationally roundtables raise more than £3.3 million a year for charity. And this is, of course, accompanied by some wonderful photographs of the firework night. One is a huge crowd of people, all with their torchlights, which are still real lit torches, walking up the High Street past Debenhams. But, of course, unlike the 25 years ago, when it used to be up at Oram's Arbour, that has become now too small for the massive crowd. They're heading towards the recreation centre. Another is of the bonfire, which had been built, I believe, this year in a shape of a building on the recreation centre. And when they set fire to it, it's a massive bonfire with huge flames pouring out into the night, bright yellow. And three, of course, of the fireworks, some sparkling white and red ones, some shooting up blue and red ones, and some exploding bright green in the middle of the trees, exploding into white lights, shooting up into the night on bonfire night.
Joining forces with veterans. Winchester University students have been working alongside veterans to help them study archaeology. Dubbed Heritage for Heroes, the project was developed in 2016 alongside Help for Heroes and is aimed at British former service personnel. It was conceived by Dr. Paul Everill, senior lecturer in archaeology, and Giles Woodhouse, an archaeologist and retired senior army officer. This year's project saw staff and students work with veterans of conflicts in Georgia, Ukraine, and Afghanistan. It has been an incredibly humbling experience to work alongside men with a range of physical and mental injuries and to see them benefit from the experience, said Dr. Everill. In some cases, there seemed to be an improvement with each passing day, and the increasing good humour and banter was often evident regardless of language barriers. They were all remarkable individuals. I have always found my own pleasure in archaeology and am lucky to have made a career out of a subject I find so rewarding. But it is wonderful to be able to share it with people who are discovering the joy of the discipline, particularly in the camaraderie and teamwork of an excavation. The veterans lived and worked alongside the staff and students over the course of month-long excavations in, you'll have to forgive my pronunciation, Nokolakovi, in Georgia, an historically important Eastern Roman site with defensive fortifications. Veterans reported positive outcomes from their involvement, including the pleasure of new friendships and the lessening of symptoms relating to post-traumatic stress disorder. Justin Mackenzie Smith, British ambassador to Georgia and a regular visitor to the team in where they're working, said, "Working together to support our veterans is a vital part of that relationship. I have been impressed and moved to see how this initiative supports the well-being of British, Georgian, Estonian and Ukrainian veterans, building new confidence and skills."
Clash over temporary uses for area. Councillors have clashed over the temporary uses in the Silver Hill area of the city centre. Conservative leader Caroline Horrell said the City Council's indecision has lost money by failing to have meanwhile uses in the area now called Saxon Gate. Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, denied the analysis. She said, "I'm pleased to say that the actions taken on Central Winchester meanwhile uses have saved rather than cost the council money. One of the Cabinet's priorities is to avoid the financial cliff edge we were facing under the previous Conservative administration spending plans. This has required us to reconsider all the council's projects and spending." Councillor Lerney said proposals for temporary offices such as the empty Coitby House on Friarsgate were unviable. The City Council is working on new plans for the regeneration of the area between Friarsgate and the Broadway. The first proposals collapsed in 2016 after a judicial review brought forward by rebel councillor Kim Gottlieb ruled the council acted unlawfully in its handling of the scheme and led a campaign to ditch property giant TH Real Estate scheme developers.
And here we have social media to blame for delay in support. Social media could be to blame for a delay by parents asking for help, a Winchester District family organisation has said. Home Start, Winchester and Districts say that on average, parents in Winchester struggle for 6 months before reaching out for support, with 60% of parents saying they feel pressure from social media to be the perfect parent. New research by the network revealed that of those polled, 51% said that fears of being seen as a bad parent would hold mums and dads back in asking for help. The charity is highlighting the unrealistic expectations put on parents by social media, which they have dubbed Insta-parenting. Liz Stannard, coordinator of Home Start Winchester, said, "Parenting has never been easy, but with the added pressures of social media, our bad days and difficult times can seem magnified compared with the seemingly perfect families we see online. Home Start offers non-judgmental, compassionate and confidential help and support. We start in the home with an approach as individual as the people we're helping. A child's earliest years are irreplaceable, and because childhood can't wait, we're there for parents when they need us most." According to the charity, Research also shows that 95% of respondents believe parents who are struggling would delay in asking for help, and local Home Start branches say that on average, parents struggle for more than 7 months before reaching out for support. The impacts caused by waiting to talk can negatively impact parents' mental health, 33%, causing feelings of isolation for families, 11%, and worst of all, from the charities and respondents' perspective, cause children to miss out, 49%. Anne, a mum supported by Home Start Winchester and District, said, "Graham, our volunteer, has been wonderful. It made such a difference knowing that he would be arriving and that we would be able to get out of the house and that I would have adult company and help with the children." According to parents, the most valued ways Home Start works with families is by offering company, a listening ear and a shoulder to cry on, the predictability of the weekly visits and giving them a break. Jessica, a volunteer for Home Start, added, "I'm a single parent and have been since I was in my early 20s. I had a really challenging time myself, and after coming out the other end, I really wanted to do what I could to support other families who were struggling, help them see that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. That parent-to-parent advice works so well at helping families to get through those challenging times and to thrive." And there is a photograph of a young mum saying that Home Start helps parents that struggle for 6 months before seeking help, and she's got a little lad in her hand. He must be about two, I would think, with his gorilla rucksack in his hand, walking along the street.
Struggling students sold drugs at festival. A student with a rose-tinted view of dealing has been jailed after he was caught with over £3,000 worth of drugs at Boomtown Festival. Junaid Ahmed was searched by security on the second day of the festival in 2018 and found to have two bags containing drugs and cash. The 24-year-old had over 19 half-gram deals of cocaine, 182 MDMA tablets and crystallised MDMA along with cannabis and ketamine. Winchester Crown Court on Monday heard that Ahmed also had £2,961.18 on him, but in an interview he told officers that the money was some savings and owed to him. Siobhan Lindsley, prosecuting, said that the former biomedicine student claimed that the bag with the drugs in was a communal bag in his group that he had picked up. But examining his phone, police found that Ahmed had been dealing drugs at the festival. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to possessing Class A and B drugs with intent to supply and being in possession of criminal properties at earlier hearings. In mitigation, defence counsel Alex Small said his client was from a Muslim background and there was a part of his upbringing that laid a weight of expectation on his shoulders. Ahmed developed mental health difficulties. After going to the University of the West of England, he decided to delay his examinations and was left with money difficulties due to tuition fees. Mr. Small said he needed a way to make money fast. He is a drug dealer that doesn't have a history of drug usage. He, in fact, had a rather warped view of what drug dealing was. He saw a way of getting rich quick to pay off his debt. Judge Richard Parks, QC, was told that Ahmed had been violently assaulted and stabbed when he visited Bristol, where his university had been, after moving back home to Cardiff, as he still owes drug suppliers there. In sentencing, Judge Park said, "Drug dealing at Boomtown Festival is a major local problem and something that is taken very seriously by the courts here in Winchester."
Man dies in fall onto tracks on the Watercress Line. A man died after falling from a bridge onto the track of the Watercress Line near Alsford. The man in his 30s fell from the Boyneswood Road Bridge at Four Marks. Hampshire Police said they are not treating the incident as suspicious. A force spokesperson said, "We were called at 6:45 a.m. on Saturday following reports of a man who fell from a bridge onto the railway tracks below at four marks. The man, who's in his 30s, was pronounced dead at the scene. His next of kin have been informed. At this stage, the death is not being treated as suspicious and a file is being prepared for the coroner." The death comes after the railway cancelled the Walk the Line fundraising event, which was due to take place on Saturday, in which people walk along the track from Alton to Alsford to raise funds for the Midhants Railway. It was called off as a result of an inspection by the Office of Rail and Road over concerns about access to the line by emergency services in the event of accident. Speaking last month, a spokesperson for the Watercress Line said, "With great regret, we have concluded that we must cancel the Walk the Line event, scheduled for later this year. Following an external health and safety review, it was concluded that given the inaccessibility of the line and restrictions on how we could deal with the potential for injuries, though none to date, the Watercress Line has been advised it is not in a position to be able to run the event this year, and the safety of its visitors is of the highest priority. We're grateful for the significant support that the event has received in the past and appreciate the efforts everybody has made to making the event so successful. We are very keen to replace the event next year with an occasion which captures the spirit of Walk the Line." An inquest into the man's death had not been opened by Hampshire Coroner's Court before the Chronicle went to print.
And here we have community centre charity Winds Down. A charity that aimed to build a community centre in a Winchester parish is winding down. Oliver's Battery Community Centre Charity, OBCCC, was established by a team of local residents in 2013, hoping to provide a new venue for activities and social events. The group had advancing plans to demolish and replace the St Mark's Church building in Oliver's Battery Road South, but after a deal with the parochial church council of St Luke and St Mark fell through, the charity decided to call it a day. Jeff Sharman, who chaired the charity when it first formed, said, "We set up the charity 5 or so years ago, I can't quite remember the exact date, and we were very optimistic, but we've not quite received the backing we expected. After the deal fell through, it was felt there wasn't much else we could do, as this is the only site in the parish that we could use. I understand that the council of the church are looking to refurbish the current building and grow the activities in the area, but the fact remains that it was built post-war. It's a prefab. It remains today and is well past its best for date." Mr. Sharman said that he is not entitled to say exactly what will happen to the money raised by the charity, but he added, "I believe some donations can be returned in certain circumstances. In others, it will be given to charitable causes." The final serving chairman of the charity, Ian Miller, refused to comment on the situation. When asked about where the money from the charity would go, he told the Chronicle, "I have nothing to say to you, and we don't need a story in the public domain. Our members know what is happening, and that is all that matters." The closest community centre to Oliver's Battery is in Badger Farm Road, Badger Farm. It hosts a range of events, including dementia cafes, choir practice, toddler classes, film screenings, and coffee mornings. The Chronicle has tried to contact the parochial church council of St Luke and St Mark, but awaits a response. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the building in question. It has a poster at the front saying, "Welcome to St Mark's Church, Church of England." And it is surrounded by some very attractive shrubs and bits of garden with a lovely bench and a path down to what is, however, still a semicircular corrugated iron prefab. Not quite what is imagined by a church nowadays.
New lease of life for former Trinity Centre. A Winchester-based architecture firm is set to turn the former Trinity Centre into housing and hopes to start construction work before the end of the year. Design Engine Architects have planning permission to replace the homeless charity's previous building in St Paul's Hill with new accommodation, including 5 houses, 2 flats, maisonettes and a studio flat. After Trinity moved to its new building in Derngate Place in 2009, that's 10 years ago, the building was empty for a year before Wessex Dance Academy took it over to use as a studio. Following their departure earlier this year, the building was left without a purpose once again. Director of Design Engine Architects Richard Jobson said, "We originally tarted the building up for the Dance Academy, but once they left it was clear the building was very run down. This company is very dedicated to upgrading the local area. Our work will improve the streetscape in that specific area, which at the moment does look very broken down. We're also installing a pedestrian route through the houses and hope to develop a courtyard in between, so the whole area would be enhanced. At the moment, it seems to be a forgotten part of Winchester. The development will comprise 1-bedroom and 2-bedroom maisonette, a 2-bedroom and 3-bedroom house, 3 4-bedroom houses and a 1-bedroom studio flat. All 5 of the houses will have a dedicated parking space." And there are photographs of what it looks like now and what it will look like. But really, you know, I don't think there's enough difference for me to say much about, to be honest.
This is a secret, so don't tell anyone. Children's and Young People Hospice Naomi House and Jack's Place has been harbouring a magical secret in the run-up to the festive period. They have hired a secret agent to work with Father Christmas himself at the North Pole to create a letter from Santa for youngsters in the area, the hospice service. For a donation of £5, the fundraising team can get a letter sent from St. Nick just in time for Christmas. Parents can ask for the letter to be addressed to their children and sent from the North Pole, including which present their child would like for Christmas. Further personalisation can be added, including the child's achievement, the gift they are hoping for, and an optional personalised PS message. All proceeds from Naomi House and Jack's Place letter from Santa will help raise vital funds for the local families they care for over the Christmas period, including festive activities at the hospices and a special visit from Santa in his helicopter. The Sutton Scotney-based organisation letters need to be ordered before Sunday, December the 15th, to ensure they are delivered before Christmas. To order a letter from Santa, go to, and it's all lowercase, naomihouse.org.uk/letter-from-Santa. I'll say that again. naomihouse.org.uk/letter-from-Santa. Now you can tell everybody.
And here we have progress made on new estate. The controversial proposed diversion of Andover Road north through the new Barton Farm estate was raised at council. Senior Biddle, a member of the public, asked councillors about the plans to stop off the current Andover Road north and reroute it through the 2,000 home new estate currently under construction. Miss Biddle said the diversion would go through the proposed neighbourhood centre, where there will be shops, community facilities and many pedestrians. How compatible is this with traffic coming into the centre? What studies have been done to analyse the impact on congestion and pollution? Councillor Jackie Porter, Cabinet Member for Environment and Wellbeing, answered that she understood that such studies needed to be done and would be part of the detailing planning application for the neighbourhood centre. The new neighbourhood centre was subject to discussion by councillors and members of the public at a meeting of the King's Barton Forum on Tuesday last week. Viv Hill, Senior Design and Planning Manager for the developer Carla, said, "Well, it looks pretty impressive and we are pretty excited about how we can complement the school on the site." Mr. Hill said that it is planned for the centre to boast a pub, children's nursery, food store, community building and extra care facility. And an office education is being planned, with discussions ongoing with Peter Simmons College about moving their adult education offerings to the site. It would be, in my view, nice to have a children's nursery, primary, secondary and adult education in a few hundred yards of each other, Mr. Hill added. While this was welcomed by councillors, concerns were raised that proposed retail units could attract a string of takeaways, but planning chiefs advised that these units were sized to cater for independent businesses looking to expand. Mr. Hill also revealed that the proposed diversion is not expected for 2 years. Councillors were also given a presentation by the head of Barton Farm Academy, Nicola Wells, who confirmed that after several delays, the school would open in September next year. She said, "We will open just one class for Year R, that is reception-age children, and there will be 30 places available. From the following year, we will open up to 60 children. In total, 420 children will be our capacity from year reception to year six."
Millions to create places. Hampshire's civic chiefs are poised to spend almost £13 million to create hundreds of school places in Whiteley, Fareham. Councillor Ros Chadd, County Council Executive Member for Education and Skills, will consider proposals to build a Church of England aided primary school that would provide places for children from 4 till 11. Councillor Chadd said, "Following a recent initial briefing, I look forward to seeing the full proposal, which will detail the rationale, scale and scope of the scheme. I am fully aware that there is ongoing and extensive housing development in Whiteley, and with that, more families moving into the area." She continued, "I am also clear about the County Council's duty to ensure that, as far as possible, we provide a school place for children near to where they live. We have a good track record in this, thanks to the extensive forecasting and planning work carried out by the Council. I am confident that the future for education in Hampshire continues to be bright. The quality of education in this county never ceases to impress me. Consistently, results at all ages are above the national average." Councillor Chadd will be making a decision with the executive as the Executive Member for Education and Skills Decision Day on November the 20th.
Work after pipe collapsed, and there's a big picture, but the description of the picture is in the article, so here. Work has been carried out after an underground sewer pipe collapsed. Southern Water have undertaken remedial works to the sewers on the Broadway in Winchester after they were called to the site on October the 28th. Around a dozen workmen have been at work with a large digger, lifting a large hole outside the Guildhall. A powerful pump has kept the workings dry as the dig is close to one of the city's underground rivers. Part of the road was fenced off and the taxi rank has been temporarily relocated to the other side of the Broadway. Southern Water's spokesperson Lewis Brown said, "We worked quickly and safely to repair a damaged section of sewer at the Broadway in Winchester. These works have now been completed. Traffic management was required to carry out these emergency work, and we thank everyone for their patience. They have also apologised for any inconvenience caused."
And now, job cuts as council approves savings plan. Plans to cut services in Hampshire in a bid to save £80 million have been given the green light, with more than 270 jobs now being at risk. Street lights are to be switched off for longer hours at night. Support for people with learning disabilities is set to be reduced, and residents are to be asked to pay to dispose of non-household wood waste and to park at countryside sites where it is currently free, as part of a move that will save Hampshire County Council £80 million by 2021. The controversial proposals, which could also mean the closure of some libraries, were approved by county bosses at a full council meeting on Thursday last week. Further details are yet to be revealed and will be subject to public consultations and further approval. As previously reported, 277 jobs are now at risk, with 120 of them being in the adult social care and health department and up to 58 in the library sector. At the meeting, Council Leader Keith Manns said this is the fifth of a series of saving programmes and will be the most challenging. Opposition leader, Councillor Keith House, hit back saying the County Council's budget is unsustainable. He added, "The incremental reduction of our services continues, and it's Hampshire people that have to pay every time we are cutting services that are essential." A number of councillors raised concerns over the effect the cuts will have on the Health and Adult Social Care Department. As previously reported, one-to-one and two-to-one support for people with learning disabilities services and services which provide drug and alcohol treatment to adults and young people, as well as support for youngsters affected by domestic abuse, are also set to be reduced. At the meeting, Councillor Michael Westbrook said, "The most vulnerable will be the hardest hit by these proposals. They will be more costly in the long term. Everyone agrees that prevention is better than cure and cheaper than cure." Councillor Liz Fairhurst, Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care and Health, hit back saying, "I would like to agree with the leader. We need a national solution to adult social care. But I would like to assure that any resident of Hampshire who needs adult social care will receive it." As previously reported earlier this year, Councillor Manns called on the government to come up with a funding strategy to tackle the increasing pressure on social care.
And that concludes the extracts for the week ending 15th of November 2019. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard, Sheila Shepard and Sheila Shepherd. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.